dead.
Hello, hello, and thank you for tuning back into Craft Beer is Dead. I am one of your hosts, Chris Face, and I will be joined throughout the interview by Bree, the pint-sized traveler, and our first interview of 2022, Lance Shaner of Omega Yeast Labs. Omega is doing amazing, fun, exciting things with new strains, old strains, constantly pushing the boundaries of fermentation, really help bucking a lot of what we kind of know as archaic information and helping to find out new things. It's not every day you get to talk to like a bioengineer, essentially, of new yeast strains and constantly pushing the boundaries of what they do and their understanding of it. So without further ado, Lance Shaner of Omega Yeast Labs.
Dead.
Yeah, so we're sitting here with Lance with Omega, president and one of the co-founders, I assume?
That's correct.
That's awesome, man. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started and everything?
Sure. My connection to brewing happened in college, I guess. I went to University of Illinois, and they had a homebrew club that was actually affiliated with the university called Buzz. Although I found out recently when I went back and spoke to that club that they're no longer an official university club, because I guess the university had some second thoughts about, you know, liability with a club whose function was to get together and drink.
Oh, but a sorority is fine. Yeah. The fraternity,
well,
right?
Sure. That's fine. Friends and sororities, no problem there. it's funny just to think about how those sorts of things can, you know, impact your, where you go in life. Like, you know, if, because it was an official university club, I knew about it that way, but you know, if I was going to school now, I wouldn't know. Anyway. Yeah, I was around some really, really good brewers, so it just opened my eyes up to, you know, what you could do at home. These people were brewing, you know, the best beer I'd ever had. This would have been the late 90s. So the industry certainly wasn't as well developed as it is now. But it was how I got introduced to brewing and all the processes involved in handling yeast and all that. There was somebody in the food science department that they maintained a yeast collection, so you could get, like, they'd pull a small 5-milliliter starter and give it to you to step up. So they had, you know, huge numbers of strains available, and kind of got experience handling yeast that way. And even got duplicates of all those strains and took them with me when I went to graduate school down in Texas. So I kept homebrewing in Texas and ended up in a lab studying yeast. Not in the brewing context. It was more like human health type using yeast as a model organism.
That's cool.
But it was still meant I was around yeast and handling yeast all the time, so just got comfortable with it. And then took a detour from there to law school. And I was ended up being a patent attorney, so a biotechnology patent attorney for about 4 years after law school.
Wow.
So that was all related. The law school, graduate school thing was related in that you have, if you're going to be a patent attorney, you have to have both the technical training and legal training, because you're essentially the translator for the inventor to get their, draft the patent application for the patent office. So you have to understand both sides of those things. But that wasn't the most fun, being a patent attorney.
What?
It's funny. I've met so many brewers who are former attorneys. It's probably all walks of life. It's the same thing. You can find former attorneys because it tends to burn people out.
I could see that.
But it ended up, I had made some very important connections there. So my business partner was actually an attorney at the firm too. He's an electrical engineer by training. And so that's how we met. I got the whole idea for starting Omega by talking to one of my other colleagues at the firm who was starting a brewery. They're in the northern suburbs of Chicago. So that was literally, it was that conversation with him that spawned the idea, because I was just getting a little tired of being a lawyer at that point and looking for something different. And just the conversation with him about where he was going to be getting his yeast just kind of sparked this idea that there's nobody else doing this in the Midwest, and we could maybe do things different and better. And so it was off to the races at that point. This was late 2012 was when that conversation happened,
and we
had space by 2013 in March. Wow. So it moved pretty quick once that spark was lit. We've been around since 2013, just growing very steadily and robustly. Had like one employee after a year, and now we're up to 40 employees or so.
Oh wow, that's really cool, man.
Grown quite a bit.
That's awesome. Are you guys like in the same location still? Like, I was actually curious too. One of the things I wanted to throw at you was, you know, when you guys started, like what scale of an operation were you guys working on versus kind of what you've grown into now?
Yeah. So we're in the same area, and we actually still have our original space. So we're kind of in the northwest side of Chicago. And we, our original space was in a costume warehouse, kind of sound. we found people that were willing to lease to us. So we had kind of this 1500 square foot space kind of walled off in the costume companies where we started, and we still have that, use it for other things now. And eventually we expanded to around 3000 square feet, I think, in that space. And we still have that and use it as storage and whatnot, but that's where we started. When we were outgrowing that, there happened to be a building right next door on the other side of the tracks that was up for sale, and it was around a 10,000 square foot building. And we jumped on that and kind of built it out. And at that point, the pace of our growth was fast enough that we knew we needed to kind of stay ahead of this thing. So we were extremely fortunate in that there were a couple houses behind the building that we had just bought that were for sale. They were already zoned in a manufacturing district. They were in really bad shape. So we snatched up those properties and then built a ground up facility.
So you just own the whole block is what you're saying.
There's an alley that's split, and we own one side of that, all the buildings there. And that's around a 14,000 square foot building. And it worked out really well because that we'd learned enough about our process at that point that we, were able to design it around our process and make it very efficient use of space. We changed from, we used to use dry malt extract as our growth medium, just had a boil kettle and boiled it. But we switched to an actual brew house using malt when we moved. Which relieved one of our greatest stresses, which is that there aren't that many DME manufacturers, believe it or not. There's basically Brees and I'm forgetting, there's a Muntin's.
Yep.
Are the two major dry malt extract providers. Brees is in Wisconsin, they're very close, but they every once in a while they'd run out of our preferred DME, so we'd have to switch to another, which isn't what you like to do, for consistency. And Muntin's is in the UK, so it's hard to get large quantities of that very, very quickly. So it's just a frightening kind of place to be, to have all of your production hinging on supplies from a single supplier, whereas switching to malt, there are tons of people that can supply malt in bulk. So it just made sense to make that switch. Malt is cheaper than dry malt extract, so get costs down some. Obviously, a lot more equipment needed with that, but we got a four vessel brew house. So we look a lot like a brewery. If you were to see our space, it looks like a brewery, except propagation tanks are a little different. Either have mixers in them or recirculation pumps to keep everything moving during propagation, rather than just a still cylinder conical.
So how many people actually work in the lab versus on the retail side?
We have here in Chicago, so all of our Chicago is all production. There's not too many people that are just office staff. Really only a couple in Chicago. St. Louis is where my business partner's from. And while we both started out up here, he eventually moved to St. Louis and, kind of started the marketing and business office down there. And they've got five or six people there.
Nice.
So everybody that does production is here in Chicago. Split between actual lab work, packaging, running a brew house, shipping, all those sorts of things.
That's cool, man. You naturally touched on a couple of things I wanted to ask you about too, which was, you know, one from like the making the beer aspect. I noticed on like your social media and stuff, you guys delve into a lot of experimental things, checking things out with yeast. Like, is that one of the primary motivators for finding what new strains or specific strains can do? Or is it more of just kind of a cool way to play around to see their limitations and such?
Definitely the thing that still excites me most about doing this is new strains, coming up with new strains, finding new strains, creating new strains, breeding new strains.
You guys kill it on that too. And like, I can't tell you, I think it's every 2 months I see a new strain come out from you guys where like, it makes me want to screw up our production schedule back there and just throw something in the tank and see what happens.
Yeah. And I mean, but that's probably what's fun about doing what you're doing too, right?
Oh, hell yeah,
you have flagships and you got to do those sorts of things. But the fun part of it is trying new things and finding that next flagship. So that's where I definitely have a lot of fun. And we have a one barrel pilot system, like an electric pilot system. And again, plenty of people that like to drink. So we have lots of willing subjects to test things. So we'll just do, you know, one barrel batch and split it up into six fermenters and, you know, either vary temperatures or vary strains. There's always some experimental purpose. And then, you know, we have Google Docs people can fill out to evaluate things or lab, things like that. So we try to make all the brews we do, you know, scientific and get some data out of it.
Sounds a lot more professional than what we do. Yeah. I think we need to print out some Google Docs.
I actually need to steal that idea.
I mean, we could certainly be better on that front too. It's a lot of work to be, you know, diligent about these sorts of things and a lot of training involved in it to get, to where you can trust the data you're getting from it. And it's not just, it seems kind of fruity, you know, you need a little more than that. So
that's how we describe
you. We could definitely improve on.
That's awesome, man. What do you guys like, just out of curiosity, what are you guys pouring right now that you guys are super excited about recently that you've brewed?
We have a lot of lager fans here, so a lot of times it's just variations on different lagers. What we've been spending a lot of time experimenting with is kind of a follow-up to the Cosmic Punch strain, a lager version of that, so a thiolized lager. It's been a lot more work than we thought it would be. So it's not just as simple as like moving this gene into whatever strain we want, because there's a lot of other unique aspects to the genetics that make it kind of behave a little differently depending on which strain you put it in. So the enzyme we use is a native yeast enzyme called IRC7, and it can take these thiol precursors that are naturally present in malt and hops, and it clips off the amino acid cysteine from 3SH, which is the thiol that we can smell. It smells like passion fruit, grapefruit.
Okay.
But in addition to that, this enzyme can also take that amino acid cysteine and clip off an H2S molecule. So, which, you know, smells kind of, you know, farty, for lack of a better.
Yes.
It does both of those things. And in the ale background, it doesn't really cause a problem because you're usually doing warmer fermentation. So it's more volatile and blows that stuff off. It just doesn't produce quite as much of it. But when you put that in a lager background, it could be a couple things going on, but there's already this baseline of sulfur that's a little higher in a lager yeast. Mm-hmm. Like, you've ever made a lager, you've smelled sulfur coming out during fermentation. So you've got that baseline already, and then you've got this enzyme that kicks it up another notch. So in certain contexts, it's making a little more sulfur than we would like. So we've been kind of switching gears to we found a different enzyme that does the same thiol release that we like, but it's more selective. So it won't take the amino acid cysteine and clip off the H2S from that. Right there, it seems like, we've solved the problem. But again, it's a little more complicated than that because you've also, when you're freeing up this good thiol, you've released a bunch of this amino acid cysteine inside the cell, and that can mess with kind of its internal equilibrium on sulfur usage. So even though the enzyme itself isn't releasing H2S, it's creating a lot of this extra amino acid that's now going to get sent off and metabolize differently and could still produce a little bit of excess sulfur depending on how it's handled in the cell. So there's still strain to strain variation kind of depending on where you put this enzyme. A lot of things we didn't anticipate, and they're just kind of surprises, and it's what happens when you mess with a strain's genetics.
No, it's really cool too, man, because like I was actually going to ask you about the Cosmic specifically. We recently used it pretty heavily in a few of the hazies that they do extremely well with. And there's like a 1 day period where I remember taking gravity samples and I got that like straight fart egg smell. And I remember like freaking out, being like, oh no. And then almost calling you guys to see if I messed up or anything. But it turned into something beautiful for sure.
And have you guys lost count on how many GABF winning beers, especially hazies, have used your yeast?
Yeah, we were definitely we had a good period of time there. There's 1 year.
I think there was like four or something, right?
It was at least that. Yeah. Out of the nine. So yeah, there's, I forget, we're probably IPA, double IPA, and pale ale were probably the three hazy categories. And so out of
that's
those
just
nine
so wild.
Years, yeah, there was like five or six, I think, that had used ours. And of course, we're all using the same strain.
Right. Pretty much, yeah.
That's
the other
so
winners
crazy.
Probably used the same strain from a different provider. it's a popular strain for hazies. But it's actually a little hard. I think a lot of brewers do kind of, use multiple providers. So we can look down the list and see like, oh yeah, like tons and tons of these people are our customers, but we don't, it's hard to say whether someone will reach out and tell us that, oh yeah, we use this yeast to win this reward. And that's definitely rewarding.
That's cool, man.
So the first time that ever happened was pretty neat. and there was a stretch there, I think, 2 or 3 years in a row, I think it was 3 years in a row, the most populated category that got the gold medal was one with yeast from us. So the first in that run was Hailstorm, like 4 or 5 years ago, that won with their pale ale, I think. So that was before the hazy revolution. and then it was like the IPA the next 2 years I'm embarrassed that I'm blanking on this. Old Irving won one of those years, and Alarmist won
The
other year. So
that's very cool.
So Chicago likes their hazies.
You guys are doing something all right.
I think it's the water, largely, honestly. We're just like blessed with perfect brewing water. Lake Michigan is just perfect brewing water.
I wish we had that same thing going on down here. We've got a
that's
bunch of calcium in ours. So.
Yeah, and that's that's common. Like when I talk to anybody, there's always something. There's some quirk about their water that they have to deal with. In Chicago, it's like we adjust our pH a little bit, but otherwise it's like perfectly balanced brewing water.
I did not know that.
That's awesome, man. And then, Cosmic has been, I'm assuming, treating you guys very, very well. We're seeing tons of breweries down here start using it. We've actually started doing like blend pitches too, with using that in percentages with like DIPA and some other stuff too. And that's been super fun. But outside of yeast, you guys carry a lot of different options as well. I know we have a lot of homebrewers listening in too, for like the proper starter, proper seltzer. And even then we use that on our seltzers as well. But, are there any like new projects coming up outside of yeast that you guys are looking to kind of tackle as well for just the brewing community at large?
I'm not sure about outside of yeast. Yeah, I mean, you hit on the ones that are the non-yeast ones as far as the nutrients. And I mean, potentially, as we do more research on nutrients, there might be, kind of more specialized nutrients for particular situations that I could see coming down the road. But nothing as far as non-yeast that comes to mind. Definitely most of our R&D efforts are focused on yeast.
Oh, I'm sure. I did want to chat with you too about, how do you pronounce it? Kvek? Kvike? Kvike?
Kvike. I feel like that's how we've been saying it. Yeah, but I feel like Kvek is how I always said it.
Okay.
But now it's definitely good to actually hear it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Aloud for the first time. That's not just from you.
So, I also, I'm not Norwegian. So,
but if there's someone who's going to know, I think it's you.
and you can, so if you Google how to pronounce Kvike, you can, there's actually a recording somewhere of an actual Norwegian. And it sounds, again, like something I can't do. I think there's like, that sounds they make in
new syllables that we don't know exists.
Yes. Just sounds.
So it sounds a little different, but that's well. And then one of the funny things is Lars has talked about this, where it kind of depends on where in Norway you are. I mean, much like, you know, the United States, like we say things differently depending on which part of the country we're from, and they have the same thing in Norway. So sure. It depends on if you're from the north or south of Norway, how you pronounce it.
This week's episode brought to you by A La Carte over in Orlando. A La Carte is easily one of the best places to grab a beer in Central Florida, with an ever-rotating mix of hazy, sours, pastries, seltzers, whatever it is you want, they've got it for sure. And if that's not enough, they also have a rotating list of food truck and food vendors to constantly keep things fresh and satisfy anybody who's coming in with you or your group. And if that wasn't enough, they're always doing awesome events. Like this month, January 15th through the 17th, it's an event called Ahab's Revenge, focused around rare stouts on both draft and package. They're also gearing up for an all-Orlando tap takeover during Orlando Beer Week, which is the 22nd through the 29th, and help them celebrate Australia Day this month on January 26th with live Australian music, fun food, and Foster oil cans, with some proceeds going to charity. Again, that is A La Carte in Orlando, Florida. Go by, say hi to their amazing team, and tell them we sent you.
So speaking about that, because I'm pretty sure I'll pronounce it wrong, even though I just asked you, you guys seem to be not necessarily like the leading, or not pioneers. I mean, I know it's been kind of a generational strain for years and years and years in Norway, but as far as like commercial yeast production goes, we have not seen anyone doing the same kind of things that you guys are doing. So what was it about that strain that not only kind of set you guys off, but also, I mean, from the looks of it, keeps you guys coming up with new, fun, and exciting different ways to do things with that specific type of yeast?
Yeah, I mean, it was just so outlandish when we first read about it. Was kind of what made us want to, you know, see what it was all about, because the claims that were being made of it were just so crazy that, you know, you could make clean, fruity beer in the, you know, upper 90s. I mean, you tried that with, you know, English or American ale strains, they'd it'd be fusely and just, mm-hmm. you know, hot and gross. So it just, you know, it was hard to believe when we first read about it. So we just got a hold of the first strain we could, which happened to be, in the Kveik parlance, would be the Stranda strain, but we call it Hothead. Mm-hmm. And the reason we did that is because at the time, this was 2015. I mean, nobody knew what these were yet. So when we wanted to release a strain, we kind of gave it a kind of a cute name that, you know, reflected what it did, as opposed to calling it Strandekvik, because then nobody would have known what that was or what to do with it. It just would have sounded too weird. But obviously, you know, since then, people became aware of what they were. So then future releases were named by, you know, kind of the traditional naming. But yeah, they were just, we got a hold of that strain and brewed a split batch, again, like we always do, with temperature as the variable, and we're immediate believers. I mean, the batch that we fermented at 95 degrees tasted just as good as the one that we fermented at 68. So it's like, these things are special and we've got to get them out there. So so we were definitely the first lab to commercially release any Kveik strain, and that was Hothead in 2015. Followed that up with Voss and Hornendahl, and then I'm blanking on the other one, Espa, and then Lutra was a strain that we isolated out of the Hornendahl blend. So Hornendahl is a collection of like 9 different strains, and Lutra is one strain out of that blend that has very clean characteristics across its temperature profile. So it just seemed like that warranted kind of its own special, applications.
Yeah, they've been super fun to play with too on our end. And then, like, specifically on that, you noted the cute name aspect for Hothead. And I have it written down too about talking about like branding for you guys. I mean, that is something that we haven't seen many other yeast.
Your packages actually have art on them.
Yeah, you guys actually brand individual strains, which is genius. You would think that more people would be doing something like that.
Yeah, seriously, not just a generic-looking bag. I was thinking that, too.
So my business partner's ears are probably burning right now. Definitely, Mark has always been very keen on on marketing and making things look nice, whereas my role has been making sure things work properly and are inherently high quality. And then his focus has been on making things look good and finding
that's the same here.
It's important to have, you know, surround yourself, like find partners and people who do things better than you and have different perspectives and all that stuff. And that's how we operate too. So, our marketing group that we hired did a really good job on the brand itself. And they work with this artist that kind of does these personifications of the strains and whatnot. So it gives them a consistent feel and they're quirky and all that. And and we get, everywhere, whenever we do shows, people comment on how nice things look. And it's nice to hear that. And it does help people remember it. It's marketing.
It's gotta be really cool for you too, where like you just look at the nuts and looking primarily at the nuts and the bolts of how something's going to operate. And then being able to get a package and be like, oh, this thing has a life of its own now. It's so much more than just a strain or a number or anything like that.
Yeah, it kind of takes on its own life. And you see, in brewery Instagram posts and whatnot, people wearing t-shirts and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of neat. It's neat to see it out in nature.
Hell yeah.
It's a little also eye grabby when you have someone in your lab who can make actual art out of the yeast. That's pretty badass. It's like actual like images and portraits and stuff.
Yes. Bianca, that's a Bianca, our lab manager. She's really great with that stuff. That's insane. She did one the other day. I don't know if I don't even have Instagram, so I don't even know what we post on Instagram. She did one the other day that was the Grinch.
Oh, no way.
And the neat thing about this WLN medium, it's kind of like got a green tint, and there are certain strains that get a really dark green when you grow them on there. So she did most of the Grinch with that green, the strain that would be green on that. And we have another one. It's actually an old lab strain that I used to use back in graduate school days that has a mutation in this one pathway that causes it to accumulate a red pigment.
Cool.
So she made the hat out of that.
Oh my
so
God.
It's actually like colored exactly like the Grinch. She's improving all the time.
But she's a genius. And then she's also just creative as hell. I mean, how do you even come up with that?
I'm also awesome.
They're like, no, just pen and paper's too easy. Let me just construct a portrait out of yeast.
Yeast and petri dishes are my medium.
Yeah, that's probably a very small club on that one.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's a lot of fun.
That's so cool.
She showed me that the other day. I'm like, oh my God, what a beautiful use of green and red yeast.
So unique.
I mean, on that too, I mean, just looking through social media and stuff, it looks like you guys have a really cool culture for what the brand is for you guys too. Because I was looking through
a little
and
double
you guys had
entendre
like,
there.
Yeah. Culture.
Thanks.
But like looking at the Halloween post where everyone dresses up in Halloween costumes for the day or like stuff like that. That's gotta be a lot of fun, man. Do you guys kind of like encourage that and try to get people to have that's awesome, man. It's always good to see something like that.
Yeah, and it self-perpetuates. I mean, that's kind of how we were at the beginning. So then when people are brought in, they're conformed to our culture. Halloween, we do that. We have a series that it's kind of on hiatus right now, given the rampant spread of COVID. Mm-hmm. But we invite a brewery or a couple breweries once a month over to do karaoke at our space. In our old space, we've got a whole karaoke, and we have a ludicrous number of musicians here. So like multiple people that play drums and guitar and bass and all that stuff. So we have that kind of stuff kind of set up over there too. So we can do, a little bit of live band karaoke.
Such a boring day at the office. How do you guys?
Yeah. But, I mean, it's fun to, help us kind of interact with some of our customers in a social way where we don't talk about yeast at all. We just, sing and make fools out of ourselves.
Hell yeah.
It's a lot of fun. It's definitely a good culture. And a huge part of our efforts is to maintain that culture. So make it a place where people enjoy coming to work. And I've worked in conditions that weren't enjoyable. So it's important to me to have a place where people, as much as one can like coming to work.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Lance, I was just going to ask about wrapping up 2021 and how that was for you guys. And then also, the next year, 2 years, 5 years, whatever that looks like as far as, what you guys are focusing on.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. We definitely have some improvements on the thiol stuff. I mean, including Cosmic Punch. I think there's going to be a better version of that coming. The way I've kind of started to look at yeast is almost like in a software model. I mean, we came out with Cosmic Punch 1.0, which we liked a lot, but it didn't mean we stopped there. We recognized that there are ways that we could make it even better, so we've continued to work on that. And when we have a better version of it, we'll release, you know, replace the existing version with a better version. So it's, you know, we're going to keep tinkering and making things better, not just you know, rest on what we've created, but continually make it better. So we're doing that in the thiol front. We're still working on souring yeast strains, so we should have, I would hope, at some point, maybe in first, no later than second quarter of 2022, a yeast that can make sour beer with some twists that I can't quite share yet. Sure. And then who knows? I mean, we're always just we're doing a lot of research on haze and kind of the genetic underpinnings of haze, because strains behave differently. Different strains behave differently when it comes to haze, and there are genetic reasons for that. So we're trying to figure out, you know, what those genetic reasons are. And so even then, you know, if we discover what those genetic reasons are, then you could potentially move those genes around. So you could take another strain that's got a very nice ester profile, but isn't as normally hazy. And it's important, you know, to brewers and consumers, they expect beers to look a certain way. So, you know, in theory, we could end up finding strains that aren't normally good at producing haze, but have nice ester profile and kind of move that haze inducing quality into those other strains and come up with a, you know, an even better, you know, British Five. So the things like that. And we, you know, we just don't know exactly where things are going to go, but we're definitely putting more resources into R&D to figure these things out.
That's awesome, man. And from our standpoint too, we really appreciate that, because it makes things a lot more fun for us too.
Yep, that's the goal, to help you guys make new and better and more interesting beer and you know, stuff that your drinkers are going to want.
Get some more GABFs on the wall too.
Yeah. You know? That's awesome, man. Well, we can't thank you enough for joining us today. And especially anybody out there listening, if you're not familiar with them, go check them out. What's the website?
OmegaYeast.com.
Sweet. And they have homebrew and commercial pitch available on there for pretty... How many strains do you guys got now?
I mean, in the public catalog, there's like 75 that pros could get. I think it's in the low 30s for homebrew. And we have a lot of strains frozen away for customers. So we have hundreds and hundreds of strains frozen away. But yeah. Wow.
That's awesome. Hell yeah, man. Well, again, thank you so much for being on here with us. And we personally, I look very, very much forward to seeing what you guys do over the next year.
Great. We appreciate the invitation. Dead. Dead.